morning and welcome to the 2025 Discover Big Ten Football Media Days. Next week, our team's open training camp, and just 37 days from today, Rutgers, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin will kick off their seasons and the first full weekend of a 2026 college football season. Among the 18 head coaches you'll hear from over the next 3 days, I want to especially welcome new Purdue coach Barry Odom to the conference. Thank you to our hosts, the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority. This is the Big Ten Conference's debut in the city that will host our 2027 women's and 2028 men's basketball tournaments. This year, we're excited to announce new and expanded partnerships and platforms to strengthen our conference and deepen the impact of our corporate partners. These relationships reflect our shared commitment to innovation, fan engagement, and delivering value to our student athletes and schools. This fall will be the second year of the We Give Blood Drive in partnership with Abbott, attacking the worst blood shortage in a generation. Last year, more than 20,000 Big Ten fans donated blood and saved more than 60,000 lives. And the University of Nebraska won a $1 million prize to support student health initiatives. This year, we'll be kicking off the competition on August 27, with the winner announced December 6 at the 2025 Discover Big Ten Football Championship game in Indianapolis, airing on Fox. Last month, we announced a new collaboration with PayPal and Venmo that allowed our schools to securely and efficiently distribute payments to student athletes on July 1st. This year, Venmo will present a new Big Ten rivalry series that will highlight some of the most storied matchups in college sports across football and men's and women's basketball. The 2024-25 season was a remarkable one for the Big Ten, for our student athletes, our coaches, administrators, and fans. During their historic first Big Ten season, USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon combined for 19 conference titles, including Oregon's 2024 Big Ten Football Championship. Big Ten members won 13 national championships in football, field hockey, women's volleyball, men's water polo, men's gymnastics, women's ice hockey, men's and women's indoor track and field, men's and women's wrestling, women's golf, men's outdoor track and field, and rowing. Additionally, we had 9 national runners-up, including in men's and women's lacrosse and women's gymnastics, and national semifinalists in men's soccer, women's basketball, and men's ice hockey. We also reached the baseball and softball World Series in the same season for the first time since 2019. It was an equally impactful year off the field for our members with the approval of the House settlement and the implementation of a new model for collegiate athletics. We continue to work with our colleagues in the A4 and throughout college athletics to ensure that the new model provides the intended benefits for student athletes while providing a sustainable, transparent, and fair system of competition. Our administrators and coaches have made it very clear, we are committed to the new model. Now let's focus on football. The Big Ten played in 8 of the 11 college football playoff games last season, and we had both teams in the Rose Bowl quarterfinal game. On the way to their 9th national championship, Ohio State defeated the 9th, 7th, 5th, and top-seeded teams in the 12-team bracket, giving the Big Ten back-to-back titles. Last year, the 4 most viewed college football games of the season featured Big Ten teams, as did 7 of the top 10 and 12 of the top 20. Each of our 3 broadcast television partners, CBS, Fox, and NBC, had at least one Big Ten matchup with more than 9.5 million viewers. 21 of our games had more than 5 million viewers, and 40 had at least 3 million viewers. As for the 25 season, this week you will hear from our coaches and an outstanding group of players. It's clear Big Ten football has never been deeper or stronger. I know there's been a great deal of talk about the future CFP format, and I'm sure you'll have questions for me. First, I'd like to talk about the process. In the spring of 2024, the member conferences came together to negotiate a media deal with ESPN. Prior to concluding that deal, an agreement was reached that set forth revenue sharing from the college football playoff to the conferences and Notre Dame. At the time, there was a lot of discussion about future formats and the number of teams in the playoff. A specific decision on format was not reached. Instead, it was agreed that the Big Ten and SEC would control changes to the CFP format and the selection committee process after considering feedback from the membership. Like the revenue share parameters, the Big Ten and SEC's format control is set forth clearly in the agreement that all members signed. With respect to format, the Big Ten has been consistent in its strong preference for a playoff system that allocates spots based on conference standings and the results of play-in games. We want to better connect the regular season and the postseason. A critical goal of any postseason format, regardless of sport, is to keep as many teams alive as deep into the season as possible. We want more conference games to matter in November. Also, the playoff format should not function as a disincentive to schedule tough non-conference games. As we said throughout this process, we are open to considering any format ideas that come from our colleagues or the CFP staff. But to be clear, formats that increase the discretion and role of the CFP selection committee will have a difficult time gaining support from the Big Ten. I want to leave more time for questions, so thank you all for being here, especially our 18 head coaches and 54 student athletes representing their schools. And as I said, I look forward to your questions. Thank you.
At this time, we'll open the floor for questions for Commissioner Petitti. On your right, Tony.
There we go. Thank you.
Hi, Commissioner, I'm so far back you can't even
see me. Yeah, I can barely see you past the pole there.
I'll let somebody else ask a playoff question, but I was just wondering your take on last week's issues between the CSC, the guidance they gave about collectives. When's that going to get resolved, and how urgent is it that that issue gets resolved?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I think it's worth sort of talking about the relationship and the ongoing relationship that plaintiffs' attorneys have in this process. You know, the CSC is brand new. It's in the process of making rules. We've had an incredible group working on an implementation committee to provide guidance and help with rulemaking. Some of that has to be in a process that goes past the plaintiffs' lawyers. That's what happened in this case. I don't think it's unpredictable, but there'll be some moments like this where, whether it's guidance or interpretation of rules, there's some discrepancy. But I think, you know, what's happened over the last few days, you know, based on our talking to our general counsel and others, that, you know, they're working together to try to get to the right resolution on this and then to move forward. I don't think it'll be the last time that there's some issue that comes up in the process. Again, I think people have to be patient when it comes to the CSC. You know, the settlement, frankly, came later than we expected in terms of its approval. We're grateful that Judge Wilkins chose to approve it, but it did, you know, compress the time period. So there's a lot to catch up on, and there's a lot for, you know, coaches and administrators to deal with. But, you know, I don't think it's unusual when you have something this different that, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road to get to the right place. But I think everybody's committed to get there.
On your left, Tony.
Doug Lamarice from Kings of the North. Is it a must in your mind that the power conferences play the same number of conference games? And if the SEC won't go to 9, would the Big Ten ever consider going back to 8?
Yeah, so first, it's not a must. Like, each league will decide what they think the best conference schedule is for them. I think in a system where you have allocated spots, I think in talking to our athletics directors and coaches, I don't think we really care how many conference games any league is playing, because you're qualified off your conference standings. That's sort of up to you to run your own league and decide how you want to do it. But when you get to a system that's increasing the at-larges and increasing the work of a selection committee, that's when you need to understand, like, how we're competing in the regular season. Like, look, at the end of the day, it's really simple math. With 18 schools and 9 conferences, you know, we're losing 9 more games to start. And so at the end of the day, I think it's really relevant. So will we consider, more at-larges? Like, right now, I think the first thing is to really understand what everybody's doing in their conference schedule. But there's a second really critical part, which I mentioned in my remarks, which is, what are we doing to get the selection process right? So I think those two things go hand in hand. First is, how many conference games are we playing? And then secondly, what's the selection process going to be? People have talked about improving the committee's work. I believe the committee does a great job with what they have, and I've yet to hear any member tell me that more data will make the job easier. They have a lot of things in front of them. We went through a mock selection. We saw it. And so I just think those two things have to go hand in hand. First is the conference games. But again, if you go back to an allocated system, then I don't think we really care about how many conference games anybody plays.
first row here, Tony, on your right side. There
we go. Good morning, Commissioner. AP Stidham, AP as we see it. Commissioner, have you given any guidance to your membership about the allocation of the revenue share with regards to Title IX? Most people, when you read the stories, they discuss more to the football and the men's basketball, but if you had those discussions with your membership and any guidance along those lines?
Yeah, there's been a lot of discussion. As you can imagine, the system was new. We've been working to sort of implement it for more than a year at this point, since we made the agreement in principle to approve the settlement back, I guess it was last May of 24. I think consistently throughout everywhere, people are taking a market-based approach to how they allocate rev share. One thing about the way this system is built, there's no obligation to get to any number. What sports you choose to support, how you allocate the money among your student athletes, that's really a decision that's made institutionally. So in the Big Ten, what we focused on is letting our members make the decisions they think are right for their programs and right for their student athletes, and then continue to provide the benefits that we've been doing and the support for all of the teams. So really it's an individual school decision about that. But I would tell you consistently, you're seeing more of a revenue market-based approach in terms of how the revenue share is allocated among members.
On your far right.
Yeah. Stuart Mandel from The Athletic. Tony, when talking about CFP format, obviously you have a lot of constituents, coaches, ADs, and so on. The public, the fans, have indicated overwhelmingly they do not want a system where certain conferences get more bids than others. At what point, how much emphasis, if at all, do what the public want come into decisions like this?
Well, first, let's take issue with the way you're phrasing that. I don't really know. I'm not aware of massive studies with real research that have demonstrated that.
It's not a scientific poll, but a poll I put on Twitter this morning, it was 76% for 5 plus 11, 24% for the plan you guys want.
Look, I think, we feel pretty strongly that fans will really gravitate to a play-in weekend. That, providing games that are do or die on the field will drive fan interest. Whether there's enough information that fans have in any one poll about what a new system will be, I'm not aware of how it was phrased or not. I just believe, and I'm talking to our league, the weekend that we're talking about where you'd have championship games and across all conferences, meaningful play-in games, I don't see how that's a bad thing for college football. And I think fans will gravitate to it.
In the middle, Tony.
Good morning, Commissioner. Bob Akairi with Reddit's College Football. You've talked about your concerns over subjectivity in an expanded playoff format like a 5 plus 11. Do you feel there was issues with subjectivity in the committee this past season that leads you to that conclusion?
Well, I think it's been a really hard thing to do for a long time. I mean, you go back to going back to the BCS and deciding who the two teams are and then going back through the 14 playoff. It hasn't been easy. And I think I'm not going to comment on the last couple of seasons, but I think there are a lot of places who think it's also, teams not getting consideration. I just think there's a lot of that. So the idea that I'm not going to point to any one, school, whether it's in our league or outside our league, you can go back and look at the reaction when the rankings come out and who's invited and see all that yourself. But at the end of the day, I think there's been, a lot of concern about how those decisions are made. I focus on that piece. How are we differentiating from teams that don't have head-to-head play, teams that don't play common schedules across leagues that do different things? And I think that's a really hard, tall order. And the point I will make is that every time you think about expansion, I think there's some sort of counter idea that it gets easier to make these decisions. It actually gets harder. More teams look alike. More teams are going to have 9-3 records. More teams are going to struggle in a conference road game. More teams might stumble in a conference home game. And some teams play tougher non-conference schedules. At least, and it's also just the evolution of how you go through the season and how you move across. So I just think that those decisions are really difficult to make. And, I know this has been the system that we've used for a really long time, but I have a hard time believing expanding it that will make these decisions easier. Thank you.
On your far left.
Adam King, 10TV. There's a report out that you wrote a letter to the NCAA about the Michigan sign-stealing scandal. Curious whether the letter happened or not. Do you believe that should be put to bed, that the punishment that you issued is strong enough and that investigation should be closed?
Yeah, well, the first part, I'm going to confirm that we did submit a letter. It's not uncommon in proceedings for a conference office to weigh in on. I'm not going to address what the contents of the letter we sent are. And because it's an ongoing process, I don't think it's appropriate for me to comment about whether it's enough or not while there are individuals deliberating. I don't think that's the right thing to do in the process. You know, look, I will say, having gone through this, one thing to point out is I think when you think about the CSC and the discipline and what we're trying to build with the new entity, you know, having an enforcement mechanism that just is faster is a priority, one that reacts more quickly. You know, this is a system we have now. It's been in place for a long time. It functions the way it was built. But I do think there's this consensus among our colleagues that whatever we're building for the enforcement piece that's going to live inside the CSC, that it's got to be there. It's just difficult to be still talking about this, you know, almost on two seasons after. So I think everybody agrees that sort of that part of the process should change. Thank you.
Just a reminder to please state your name and affiliation clearly into the microphone. Tony, standing in the back on your right.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
In the back, Commissioner. Todd Sadowski, Fox 43 Sports and Nittany Game Week. I wanted to ask you about our location here for the next couple of days in Las Vegas. There's no Big Ten programs here. What went into the reasoning to have them host Big Ten Media Days? They obviously have the College National Championship coming up. What do you see as the future of this city and the involvement potentially in the Big Ten Conference?
Yeah, I mean, to be really candid, this was a logistics thing. There were some things going on in Indianapolis. You know, we've tried to and have brought our Media Days to Indy, and it's worked really well for us. There just wasn't possible this year, and then we had to make some decisions about where to go. We're bringing our men's and women's basketball tournaments here in the next couple of years, so it made sense. And the city's been great in terms of, you know, providing us the resources we need to do this. I think, obviously, you know, we are a conference that goes coast to coast, so having some presence closer to our West Coast members is not a bad thing. So it was really just started with logistics, to be really candid.
First row, right in front of you.
Yeah. Commissioner, Steve Hellwagon, Bucknuts and 24/7 Sports in Columbus. Question I have is about the play-in situation that you want to institute for the playoff. Last year it was pretty cut and dried that you had four top 10 teams that should mm-hmm. be in the playoff. Mm-hmm. I guess the trade-off is those teams worked so hard to establish themselves after 12 or 13 games as top 10 teams, why should they have to play Illinois or Iowa, just as examples, who had more league losses? I don't sense a clamor for a four-loss team in a playoff, and doesn't that create a situation for the playoff, which we saw blowouts in the playoff last year, for more blowouts in the playoff, which drive down the ratings and make it less lucrative, perhaps, to put a team that doesn't deserve to be in the playoff?
Yeah, there's a lot there, so let me try to do it in order. So the first piece about the value of the play-in games, first I have to commend our coaches because they obviously talk about the same thing you just raised. Like, hey, if I'm in position, I can get hurt by losing a game. I think where our coaches came down and our ADs was that, you know, at the end of the day, there are 18 members in the Big Ten. You have 17 available opponents. You play 9 of them, right? So there's a lot of discrepancy, let alone making comparisons, you know, across the leagues. There's a lot of issues about how you compare teams inside the Big Ten. You know, your schedule, just by the way it plays out, might be easier than people thought when it was made up. We obviously try to competitively balance our schedules. So there's an issue there, like even within our own league, giving teams a chance. Where we came down is that we were willing to take that risk. If you had 16 teams, there's still a catch-all where there's potentially 3 at-larges. So if, in your example, if a 6 seed beat a 3, could the 3 then go into a pool to get in? Maybe. But at the end of the day, I think our coaches are willing to take that risk because what they're thinking about it is not a snapshot of any one season. They're looking at how do we get more teams in contention? Look, as you expand the playoff, the rest of the bowl system and how we're trying to protect all of that, you're basically driving everybody to this one event. And it's just, I think in every league's interest, not just ours, to have more teams emerging, like, you know, like Indiana did last year, giving more teams a chance to compete. And there's just huge value in having games across. Look, last year Ohio State was 7-2 and finished 4th in the Big Ten, right? Was undefeated in non-conference play. So, you know, the idea that we can go deep, I feel pretty strongly about that. If you're 6-3 in the Big Ten, I would argue that's a great record. And if you stumbled in a non-conference game, I don't know why that disqualifies you. 8-4 is a winning percentage. If you project that winning percentage in every other sport, I'm pretty sure you make the postseason. Whether it's hockey, basketball, anywhere else, like that type of winning record. So we've conditioned ourselves to think that if you're not a one or two loss team, you're not worthy of competing. There are plenty of teams in professional sports who qualify for the playoffs who can't get past a first round game. That's okay, they still get to play. Like, you know, we'll figure it out on the field rather than sitting in a room.
Tony, front row on your right.
Kenneth Berry, Touchdowns and Tangents. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Obviously, it's pretty hard to outdo a national championship. So just in regards to all the success from last season, what global brand deals might be on the horizon for the conference that you can or maybe can't speak to at the moment?
Yeah, I think you saw it in terms of like what we're doing with PayPal. When you think about the reach of the conference and what we're able to do, like, you know, obviously each of our institutions has their own, you know, local sponsorship and deep relationships in their own market, their own states. But I do believe that you're going to see this sort of change, and that the reach that we have allows us to do those types of deals. And I think you should expect to see more of that, and making it more of a priority for the league across, because we have tremendous reach. We drive large audiences, incredible passion. You know, college athletics across is driving more interest than ever. So we feel like we're in a good position to expand those relationships.
Far back on the right.
Nicole Auerbach, NBC Sports. Tony, as you mentioned that the Big Ten and SEC have control over this decision with playoff expansion, at their media days last week, a lot of talk about at-large models. What is your level of confidence that you guys can figure out one of these models to move forward with? And if so, level of confidence you can do that by that December 1st deadline?
Yeah, I'm not going to put any deadline on it. Look, we've I think, pretty publicly brought our ADs together in both leagues twice, once in New Orleans, once in Nashville over the last 6 to 9 months, maybe a little longer than that, but twice during that period. And it's been productive, not just talking about CFP, but lots of other issues that are around college athletics. And so I do think, you know, we're obviously not in the same place on these discussions. I think there's lots of ideas. I think the goal would be to bring people back together, have a conversation, what we think works, and then kind of go from there. But I will say, every time we've come together with the two leagues, we still have our presidents and an advisory group meeting. Like, good things have happened, not just for the two conferences, I think for college athletics in some places, especially around the settlement.
On your left side here.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Podcast Network. Commissioner, non-conference schedules vary pretty widely across the country. You've got Clemson, for instance, that plays LSU in South Carolina. Indiana plays a very weak non-conference slate. Ohio State plays Texas, and it varies across the country. When you have a committee involved for picking the playoff, would you ever support a model where schools are not in control of their own non-conference slates?
And that's a really hard thing to change. I mean, it just hasn't come up in terms of that control. I think over the years, leagues have tried to put parameters about, you know, playing 1A4 or what you can do with FCS. Like, I think those things have been in place across. You know, I don't think that's the solve. I kind of focus more on what's the incentive to get schools to schedule stronger games. And those are some of the things we've talked about with the SEC in the season. I think fans want more of those games. I think there's been some writing like, well, those games won't mean anything if you're qualifying off your conference. I disagree with that. At the end of the day, you're still playing for seeding and straight seeding. So if you had a system where you're qualifying off your conference record, winning or losing a tough non-conference game could affect seeding. Plus, in the models we're talking about, there's still some at-large picks left. So I think we got to focus on the right incentive. You're starting to see games being dropped. I think there's a running concern among coaches, and you'll hear from our guys, and whether they cover this or not, where does winning a big non-conference game help you more than losing a non-conference game hurts you? Like, that's the sentiment. Like, what's the right way to measure that? You know, and also, a lot of these games tend to be played early in the season, and you don't quite know who your team is at that point. Like, look at the, you know, teams move up and down across the season. Teams get healthy. Some teams are unlucky. It just really depends. So I focus more on, let's create an incentive to schedule more of them naturally, and if we, because I don't think we need rules to do it.
Tony, on your right side.
Hi, Tony. Scott Docterman with The Athletic. Your colleague with the Southeastern Conference has touted his conference as the best in the country and produced materials to suggest their strength of schedule is better than even, in some cases, a 9-game schedule with the Big Ten. How do you agree with him on that, or do you disagree on that? And also, Indiana was much maligned last year for its schedule. However, the results were the results. What do you say to that, and what do you how do you discuss the SEC?
Yeah, I'm going to start at the back of talking about Indiana's schedule. Look, when Indiana's schedule was made, on their schedule were the two teams that played in the championship game the season before, right? They played Michigan and Washington, both at home, won both of those games. But those are the idea, like, that's part of what this is, right? And that gets back to the value of playing games. But put that aside. Look, I'm not going to comment on, you know, where any one conference is. We just stand by what we do in the Big Ten. I think the national results have shown that the last couple of seasons. I think when you look at what expansion has meant across the A4 the last couple of years, stand by how much tougher our league has got there. When you throw in the travel, how well our schools protect their home fields, all of that, I think, you know, that speaks for itself. I don't ever think there's any value in talking about, you know, one versus another. We feel really strongly about what we do in the Big Ten.
Our final question, third row.
Hi, Connor Yerge, Detroit News. Good morning, Commissioner. I wanted to ask about the Venmo and PayPal deal you mentioned earlier. What went into the decision for the Big Ten to handle the revenue sharing with athletes itself versus maybe the member institutions handling it?
Yeah, it really came from we had a group AD meeting where we're talking about just going around asking, you know, each other, like, how are you planning on making these payments? Is there a way to do it? And at the time, the ADs made it pretty clear, like, hey, is there a way we can do this collectively? It just really came from that. So Becky Penny in our office ran a sort of an RFP process. And then it became clear that, you know, in terms of, you know, what PayPal could offer and the technology and the hyper wallet and how used to young people are with that platform, that it made sense. But we ran a pretty exhaustive process. And then I think there was still a little bit of back and forth among all 18 about whether they believe that Central was the best. But we ended up with everybody in. And so far, it's gone really smoothly so far. I think, you know, every institution is different. Their ability to send money to student athletes is really tricky. So having a Central system, you know, made a lot of sense for us.
Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.